Welcome to another edition of Sport Flight FYI, sponsored by UrbanCollegeSports.com for black college scores, rankings, and classic information, as well as Sport Flight podcasts. Click on UrbanCollegeSports.com. This week, we discuss the NFL week number 6 in review. Also, a classic game for the ages, Notre Dame versus USC. Plenty of near upsets and upsets in college ball on Saturday. The White Sox finally end their 46-year World Series drought. They now await their National League opponent. This week's Bronze Pioneer, black college scores, Sport Flight's aficionado question of the week, the NBA report, which this week Sean will tell us about retirements, and an unexpected death, training camps, comings and goings. The NFL preview week number 7, and much more. However, we open with last night's dramatic ninth-inning home run by Albert Pujols, which helps to propel the Cardinals to a 5-4 win, and it ends the Astros' thoughts of an early celebration as far as going to the World Series. Your thoughts, Sean?
You know what? That was just an absolutely great game. I caught the last three innings of the game, and I was watching and seeing what just basically transpired on that. You looked at the seventh inning. You look at the error by Nuñez, third baseman, to basically open up the chance for Berkman, a.k.a. Fat Elvis, to go ahead and hit that short left field fence. And it seems like an insurmountable lead. You go ahead, you bring in your closer, who throws just some filthy, nasty stuff. And then, really, you want to go ahead and talk about Pujols, but the person that you need to talk about is David Eckstein. Now, if you look at Eckstein was...
What is he, about 5'5"?
Eckstein's like 4'3". Don't even pull that. Like, he really does look like he can fit in a Boy Scout club. So, but you look at... Very interesting to look at as far as Eckstein, Cabrera, and...
Renteria.
Renteria, thank you. You look at where they went. Renteria went from St. Louis to Boston.
Yes.
Cabrera went from...
Boston.
Boston to the Angels.
Yes.
And then Eckstein went from the Angels to St. Louis. Out of the three of those, everybody felt that the Cardinals got the raw deal because it was Eckstein. Eckstein can't, you know, he plays okay defense. He's an average hitter at best. All he does is slap hits. Well, guess what? This season in the playoffs, he has came up with some huge hits. And let's call it like it is. The St. Louis Cardinals was down to their last strike when he went ahead and took that 1-2 count and hit a slap single into left field to prolong the game. Edmonds, who did get called out who got ejected the day before on a bullcrap call, same pitch, he was able to withstand. He able to stay patient and not swing, get the walk, and then you knew something was up because one thing for sure, Brad Lidich, he was only throwing sliders, and you cannot just do that to Albert Pujols. Did he get fooled on strike one? Yes, he did, but that wasn't a strike two because he knocked that ball clearly. If there was no dome, that ball would have been in the Gulf of Mexico because he hit every inch of that ball, and that just tells you how Pujols is the best hitter whose last name isn't Bonds.
And he's still only 25.
He's still only 25. He's had four 100 RBI seasons.
Been in the big leagues four seasons.
Yeah. Four seasons. He's the only one that has done that. I'm calling this right now. Everybody keeps on saying Alex Rodriguez. I believe this man is going to be the best player to ever put on a baseball jersey, not Alex Rodriguez. This guy is just, he has everything. There is no weak spot with Albert Pujols. And then here's the messed up thing. Realize how many teams passed up on Albert Pujols. You remember what round he got drafted in the draft?
No, I don't remember what round it was.
The 20th round.
But he moved rapidly. I believe they brought him up from single-A ball.
They put a rocket up his butt. That's how far he moved up the minors. They knew what they found. And, in fact, make even so worse, there was, when he was in the Dominican Republic, there were two academies, because Major League Baseball is very big on academies down there. There was two academies said, "We there's nothing we can do for you." They wouldn't even let him in their academy. So that tells you how scouts can get it truly all wrong.
Well, you know what we say a lot of times about pundits and experts and so forth. There really are no experts in this business whatsoever.
Oh, absolutely.
Pronosticators, but no experts.
Oh, absolutely.
Whatsoever. But it did rain on the parade for the Astros, as this would have been the first time that they would have gone to the World Series. Well, actually, the first time any team from the state of Texas would have gone to the World Series. So now it goes back to St. Louis, and it's 3-2, and the Cardinals are still behind the eight ball because they've got to win again or they go home.
Well, and you also look at it, it's deja vu all over again, because guess what? St. Louis was in this exact same spot last year.
But they can they do it again? Can that magic work one more time?
I think so. I think so. You're talking about a great baseball town in St. Louis. Also, you add on the whole thing about Busch Stadium, that it's going to be any potential game now could be the last game in Busch Stadium. I truly do believe they have their pitching staff set up for game 6 and 7. They have their bullpens. I can actually see it very so happen that they can do it once again and really pull it out, because Houston has a tendency to forget how to score runs. And that can come really at any given time. And it could come in the next two games.
But the majority of the times, they don't really have to score that many runs when you got those three starters. When you got Roger Clemens, and you got Andy Pettit, and you've got Oswalt. More often than not, if a team scores one run, they're doing well against them. So Houston doesn't have to score that many runs the majority of the time. And surprisingly, Houston has scored some runs during the playoffs.
Yeah, but like I said, they do have a tendency to miss great opportunities and not score.
Silent.
It goes like it's been on a gag order.
But you know who has to be licking their chops, because now they have the opportunity to set up their pitching exactly the way they want, and they also get almost a week's rest, and that's got to be the White Sox, who, after 46 years of wandering in the wilderness, kind of like Moses.
You ain't lying about that.
They finally have made it back to the World Series. It's been since 1959, Louis Aparicio and Nellie Fox and all of those players, since they've been back to the World Series. And, of course, everyone knows it has been since 1917, since they actually won the World Series.
Exactly. And you look at it, it's amazing, actually, living in Chicago and to basically see and hear the reaction of the city. Like, as soon as the final out was made, I was looking outside my window, making sure nobody started jumping in hysteria, just jumping out of the window. I don't think they're going to do that right now. If they win the World Series, okay, the morgue is going to be a little bit busy that day, because I think this place is going to go completely nuts. And it was absolutely amazing to me.
Yeah, but how much, when you say this place, meaning Chicago.
Yes.
Chicago is traditionally behind the Cubs, the lovable Cubs.
Traditionally, oh my goodness.
Win or whether the Cubs lose, the fans are always behind them. And that's not the case with the White Sox. The White Sox have a much smaller following, so to speak. So what happens to Chicago, per se, let's say, if St. Louis does make it to the playoffs? Because St. Louis is an arch rival of the Cubs.
See, that is the most amazing thing about this whole situation that's happened in Chicago. Because now, you're right, the White Sox are basically Chicago's stepchild. And the White Sox do have compared to the Cubs, a smaller fan base. And the Sox really do resent that. These Cubs-Sox games that goes on during interleague, fights break out. Literally, fights break out. You can't be on the fence. You're either a Sox fan or a Cubs fan. And then you're going to hear it from the other side. And now, you know, and Sox fans, I think, do resent that. And now it's very interesting because the White Sox wasn't selling out this. They wasn't selling out every game this season.
At Cellular Park.
At Cellular Park, which, screw that, I'm still calling it Comiskey. But that's just me. You look at just the whole situation in general, that you see all of these Sox fans, and I'm like, and I was concerned about a lot of these folks because I saw them limping and on crutches and wheelchairs and stuff like that. And then I finally found out the reason why. It's because they was jumping on the bandwagon so much, they were spraining their ankles, they was pulling hamstrings, they was tearing ACLs, and the bandwagon is mighty damn big now. I don't know. I think they need to go ahead and get a couple more bandwagons because now the whole city's involved, which does bring up a very good point if St. Louis wins. But not only that, St. Louis or Houston, why? They're Cubs rivals. So deep down inside, and I'm calling it this, Cubs do not want to see the White Sox win. This will be probably the only time you will see some Cubs fans that's actually rooting for the Cardinals because there's one thing they hate. More than the Cardinals to win the World Series, that's the White Sox to win the World Series.
Hey, maybe they'll bring Minnie Minoso out of retirement because you know he likes to play.
Oh, my. Do you understand who they're going to dust off
they'll bring
for
Minnie
Saturday?
Out.
Do you understand who they're going to dust off? And you got to understand, the World Series was going to start Saturday regardless if the Houston Astros won or not. It was going to start
hell or high water. It begins
it was,
Saturday.
Yeah, it was going to go hell or high water. Now it's very interesting because now it's going to be the same situation if they go seven, and with the Angels, they're playing Friday, and then from whoever wins is going from St. Louis to Chicago. Luckily, that's a short trip than what Cali had to do as far as going to California to Chicago. Luckily, it's a short trip. So it was going to start Saturday regardless. This place, this city is going to be in the bus. That's all you really hear about. It's the opening story in the news, and it's the closing story in the news. And in points in between, the Sox is still part of the news. I think you know what the ball boys are from the Sox now. That's how much coverage this is. This reminds me of when the Bulls went to the NBA championship in 1991. It was just such hysterical in the city. So you're going to see, I wouldn't be surprised if I see the line up at our institute has a Sox jersey on. It's going to be black and white up in this city all over this place. So,
well, regardless if it's Houston or if it's St. Louis going into Chicago, the way Chicago is set up with the home field advantage, the opportunity to set up their pitching, and they do have equal starting pitching.
But
some people think of it as going into the Bermuda Triangle for St. Louis or Houston.
But as everybody is very talking about the White Sox and how they have done well as far as everything around, there is one thing that the White Sox should be very worried about, that's their bullpen. Their bullpen.
Well, Jinx has pitched well.
Wait, but their bullpen only pitched seven pitches in the last week. Seven pitches. That's it. That's all the bullpen did in that series. I think the thing they need to be concerned about as far as the bullpen is that now that long rest. Because remember, Garland did not pitch for 12 days before he pitched, what was that, game three? He was off for darn near 2 weeks. Well, guess what? If the starting pitcher was off for 2 weeks, okay, how long has the bullpen hasn't thrown? Some of those players have not thrown. They did not throw all of this series, and probably one of two of them didn't throw in the Boston series. So they have to be very concerned about that and track that very well as far as having those bullpen pitchers doing a lot of side work, doing some simulation games to, you know, keep their sharpness. Because one thing you do not want now is in the World Series, they might have to go to that bullpen, and they throw enough softball pitches and having them, whoever they're going to be facing, spraying the ball on the expressway.
By the next time we are broadcasting, they will have played at least two games in the World Series. So who will make it to the World Series for the National League? Who will represent the National League? Will St. Louis be able to pull it out as they did last season, or will Houston be able to hold on?
I truly believe the big bats of Pujols and how they came back and won, they gave their leader, the man on that team, the chance to win the game, and he pulled through. I truly believe that was the momentum swing that we saw. I do see St. Louis coming out in seven, and I think these are going to be great two games, and they're going to go ahead and go to the World Series to face Chicago, and I think that's absolutely great. I just, as much as I want Houston to win, and how ironic they was on the day that they were announced as a team, 45 years ago yesterday, in Chicago no less, they was one strike away to be meeting Chicago. Mm-hmm. They're 0-5 in games like that. I truly believe they're going to be 0-7 and it's going to be another heartbreak in Houston.
Wow. Wouldn't be the first.
Hey, they've been through this four times, so they should be used to it.
Hey, earlier you made mention of something which reminded me of, what is the possibility, and would you like to see instant replay in Major League Baseball? And obviously I bring this up because of, one of the reasons is because of Game 2 between the Los Angeles Angels and the Chicago White Sox in Game 2, the call by the umpire that dramatically turned around Game 2?
Yes.
And also there have been some controversial calls in the National League Championship Series as well.
Yeah. I believe in certain instances you need instant replay. I do. Everybody wants to go ahead and the lovely words we like to use, the traditionalists, don't believe that. They believe there's human element. But the problem is you don't mind it unless it happens to your team.
Oh,
then all hell's going to break loose.
Of course.
So I don't believe in every aspect, because if you do it in every aspect, or there's a reason to do it in every aspect, the games are already long anyway. Playoff games are averaging 4 hours and been averaging 4 hours for the last 4 or 5 years. So for playoff games, you know, it'll be a job. It'll be 8 hours.
They can use it similar to what they do in the NBA. The NBA doesn't use it all the time.
They don't use it all the time.
Right.
I think they only need to use it on really two instances. Fair and foul plays,
yeah,
and home run calls.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. But they don't need no booth. Every stadium has at least a 50-foot video screen in the outfield. All everybody got to do is turn around, look up, and take a look at it. Most of the screens in stadiums are high definition, so it's not like it's going to be a blurred picture they're going to miss. So I think they can use it on those two incidents, especially in the home run calls, because a lot of the stadiums and how they set up what home runs are really goofy.
This past Saturday obviously had to go down as one of the better weekends for college football, especially with the USC and Notre Dame. And boy, did we get that one wrong. I totally expected USC to wipe the field with Notre Dame. And Notre Dame impressed me.
Not always skill,
but the will, because they obviously don't have the same caliber talent as USC, but they hung in there with them.
Notre Dame proved, I think, to a national audience they are for real. And they definitely proved me wrong, because, like I said earlier, and I'm the first one to admit it, I thought they was going to get their butts handed to them in Michigan, and it was the other way around. We thought the same thing for a very much better superior team in USC, and that wasn't the case. And Notre Dame proved they are building the foundation for a run for the national championship. I do believe if they get their defense in order, they will be in the national championship run as early as next year. That's how much they proved to me they are the real deal. So, You're absolutely right. Notre Dame went ahead, played everything that they did. And actually, you have to go ahead and give Matt Leiner the props. Reggie Bush is going to win the Heisman Trophy unless he breaks his leg.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only
160 yards.
You know, you can go ahead and say Leiner is the team. Leiner's the captain of the team. He's the one that drives that car. But the engine goes to Reggie Bush.
Unless something unforeseen happens, he
won it with Saturday's performance. If anything, Leiner proved what a superstar quarterback in the making that we are seeing. Because 4th and 9, to throw that pass with the perfect defense, you cannot fault that defensive player. That defensive player did everything he was supposed to do. Leiner threw the ball where only his receiver can catch it, and his defense and the defensive player could not catch it. And the fake spike was a thing of brilliance. I think it was an option for him. He either spiked it or go ahead and go for the
for the
quarterback seat.
Going for the tie.
Yeah, but actually
on the road. So
yeah, but then actually you have to think about it. He also needs to the play before that. He needs to thank his lucky stars that he was diving towards the pylon.
Jesus was looking down on them, but normally touchdown Jesus is looking upon Notre Dame. I mean, because misfortune became good fortune for USC when he was knocked out of bounds, and had that not happened, time would have run out.
Yeah,
and game
would have been over. The game would have been over.
Because you saw how the Notre Dame fans started coming on the field.
Absolutely, they was ready to tear down everything.
Had started to go into their celebration mode.
Yes.
And then 7 seconds were put back on the clock. I mean, that reminds you of such classic endings as the Immaculate Reception.
Oh yeah.
The Hail Mary pass.
The Hail Mary pass with Colorado and Michigan. The Hail Mary pass with Doug Flutie in Miami.
Exactly.
So this will definitely go on. This is the high def game of the year. Anybody seen this on high def is going to absolutely just enjoy this game.
And if anyone ever studied the history of, or for those fans of Notre Dame, they know how Notre Dame traditionally breaks streaks.
Well,
the longest streak in the country.
They was talking about this. They was talking about that for a week, about the streak busters that Notre Dame has done. Also, a little known fact, which people was going crazy at the stadium when they bust out their green jerseys. Nobody knew about the green jerseys until game time when they came out.
They had worn those green jerseys at some time or another during Willingham's tenure.
Yes, they have, but here's the thing. The last three times they wore the green jerseys versus USC, they have won all three games. So, Notre Dame fans know this. I think that was part of the reason why they was going even more crazy. It was like, can you even throw more gasoline on this fire? You about to burn up Indiana.
Well, other games did occur on Saturday. None of them.
Yeah, believe it or not, there was more college.
Yeah, there were other games.
There was other college football games going on.
Right, but none had the hype that. And it's rare that you have a game that lives up to the hype. But I would say that Notre Dame USC Classic exceeded the hype.
Oh, absolutely. I absolutely agree.
But there was a large upset in the ACC. Virginia upsetting Florida State 26-21.
Yes.
That was a huge upset, especially in light of the fact that Virginia had just come off of two losses, one to Maryland and one to Boston,
right.
I believe.
Then you look at the a lot of people's national champions, Louisville, losing their second conference game.
Absolutely.
That was absolutely amazing because
46-44.
That was
West Virginia.
They were up
early in the game.
They was up by a lot, actually.
Yes.
And that will put a lot of stress on them to try to go ahead now because they're going through that tough conference now.
Well, most people expected them to win the Big East. This is the first year that teams such as Louisville and Cincinnati have moved over
exactly
from Conference USA
now
to the Big East, and people have predicted that Louisville will win the Big East. Louisville, if you remember, averaged over 50 points a game last season. They were the number one offensive team in college football last season.
Yes. Now you look at a very interesting fact of now they're packed in the middle, And now they got to battle and pray to God a couple other people get knocked down for them to get back on top. So it's going to be very interesting for them. And then you want to talk about Pac and Mess. What about the Big Ten?
Well, yeah, it's about five or six teams that have one loss.
And then three
and there was
or four.
The upset, and it was an upset on Saturday. And once again, people didn't notice because of the big hype with USC and Notre Dame. But Penn State went into Michigan and lost 27-25.
They did lose on the
and
last
play. Prior to that, Penn State was undefeated after coming off of perhaps their biggest win in about five seasons when they entertained Ohio State the prior Saturday.
So the Big Ten is a mess. You have, I think, about seven teams with one or two losses. You got five with one, and I think you got two or three that has two losses. So now everybody's going to be basically beating each other up. The problem is there is no conference championship game, and everybody doesn't face everybody. But that's just college football in its finest.
Oh, yeah. And I would say college football did outshine the NFL this past weekend. And one other team I have to mention as well is UCLA, who remains undefeated as they knocked off Washington State 44-41.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And Carl Durrell has really turned that program around. This is his third year there. And, you know, years ago it was always the rivalry, a crosstown rivalry between USC and UCLA.
Absolutely.
And then they always play their last game of the season, similar to Michigan and Ohio State. They play their biggest rival, which will be UCLA and USC. Now, if Carl continues to keep UCLA unblemished and they go into that final game, that might be a game worth watching between UCLA and USC.
Yes, now, yeah, and it's going to be, that probably will be the game, you know, the game of the week, because that is December 3rd at 4:30 Eastern time, and it's going to be at USC. So that is the last game in the Pac-10 schedule. So if both teams are undefeated, you're looking at probably a top-five matchup. And, boy, you want to talk about fuel for the fire. You think the Notre Dame game was going to be raucous. This game might absolutely top that.
Well, speaking of the NFL, as we mentioned, there were some upsets this week in the NFL. Most of the games went as most people expected them to go, but Dallas did defeat the New York Giants.
And they should say barely.
Yes. Well, it was in overtime, 16-13.
Well, they really did blow, they blew some opportunities. And also, Coughlin did he seemed like he wanted to lose the game more than win the game. And one of the biggest things was taking Barber out, putting in a rookie who fumbles the ball at the one-yard line such late in the game. Why are you not going to have your horse take the ball in from 1 yard and put in a rookie? It's beyond me. Luckily, defense held. And then Eli Manning, almost like his brother, to go ahead and pull off a great drive to tie the game up. And unfortunately, they wasn't able to pull it out in overtime. But you see the maturity of Eli Manning before your eyes. He looked like he was completely lost last year. Now
he looks like in rapid succession that things are going for him this season.
Absolutely, because he was not even thinking about making the plays that he's making now. The reverse spin move, the throw off your back foot sideways and throw a bullet to Plexico Burris in that drive. If he didn't slip, there was nobody within 20 yards of him of stopping him getting a touchdown. And then to run the exact same play to Shockey completely wide open was just a thing of beauty, and he was had the patience to do that. But they really need to work on as far as the opportunities, because they had a lot of opportunities, the Giants did, and just not was able to pull it through. That was the reason why the game was really so low.
Well, tell me, what is going on in Minnesota? They continue to lose. Your beloved Chicago Bears annihilated them 28-3. Now, you're looking at Dante Culpepper last year was second in passing yardage last season for all quarterbacks. And this year, he can't hit the broadside of a barn.
And that's if he's on the side of the barn.
You can't tell me the loss of one player has done all of this to their offensive team.
Maybe.
That's unbelievable.
Maybe. Maybe you can. But they truly do look like, this year and last year's team, just look like polar opposites. And I truly do not know what's going on. And you cannot blame it all on the controversy that's going on.
The Love Boat sex scandal.
The Love Boat scandal. You can't blame that all on there because guess what? They were playing bad before this happened. Maybe, you know, the whole boat thing was a way. I don't even know, and I don't even want to touch that, really. The more I think about it, the more I really don't even want to touch that.
You know, I have a NFL hot seat list, a watch for the coaches that I think may not be back next year. There's one definite that will not be back next year, and that's Mike Tyson.
Tyson's hot seat is so...
He may not make it through the season.
He might not make it to next... He might not make it to after the bye week. Mike Tyson, his seat is so hot, nobody is standing within 30 yards of him because they see that they're going to just go up in flames. He is so on the hot seat, it's not even funny. And for to have the progression of this team to keep going lower and lower and lower is absolutely amazing. But here's the messed up thing. You want to know what the messed up thing is? They're only a game behind out of first place in the North.
Well, and look...
They're only a game behind.
Look at that NFC North, obviously. I mean, Chicago and Detroit lead it with 2-3 records.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just playing 400 ball.
Yeah, so they still...
Green Bay and Minnesota.
They still have a shot. They absolutely still have a shot.
I don't see them getting it together this season whatsoever. There is a problem there. What the problem is, I have no idea specifically, but there is a problem there. There's a lack of discipline, it appears, one of the things, there's a lack of discipline.
Oh, yeah, definitely the inmates are running asylum.
Lack of focus on the part of the players as well. I think some of those players have basically given up this early in the season, have given up on this season.
Yeah.
And some of the other games that stuck out of note with some injuries, probably one of the more durable wide receivers, and for some people, the best wide receiver in the business was knocked out of the game this week, Randy Moss.
Yes, he was.
His old team. That had not happened to Moss before. He was knocked out with a groin and rib injury.
Yeah, no catches and no yards, actually.
First time he did that, exactly.
Yeah, first time he did that. So it wasn't for a lack of trying, but that, you know, as far as injuries, that could be a big blow from an already disappointing standpoint as far as the Oakland Raiders. So, and then you look at who they play, LaDainian Thompson. If he's not the best all-around player in the league, please tell me, give me another person. The man ran for a touchdown, caught for a touchdown, and let's go ahead. I'm going to go ahead and throw for a touchdown.
Well, I want to give props to a player who seems to never get his props, and that's Alexander the Great.
He loves playing on ESPN, obviously.
The man has 12 touchdowns this early in the season. He scored four TDs, rushing TDs, this past Sunday.
Yeah.
Which they didn't really play anyone when you play Houston.
Wow.
That's another coach who's on the hot seat who may not make it through the season, Dom Capers.
And another person who might make it through the season, and that's just because his offensive line is not helping him out, is David Carr. Because that man has seen the lights of stadiums all over the country. That man has been...
He has been more often prone on his back as opposed to erect on his feet.
Yeah, he's been more prone on his back on turf than he is on the trainer's table.
And for those just joining us, you're listening to Sport Flight FYI. We are podcasting as we podcast each and every Tuesday. Sport Flight FYI. And if you want more information regarding Sport Flight, as well as information on black college scores, rankings, classic information, please click on to UrbanCollegeSports.com. That's UrbanCollegeSports.com. The last team I wanted to discuss from this past week, or the last game, Denver versus New England. Denver got out to a quick start, and then they had to hold off New England. I really thought New England was going to be able to come back and salvage that victory, even though they were out in Denver. Denver is playing much better than I anticipated, especially their defensive line, or shall we say Cleveland West.
Yeah. Basically, Cleveland imports, I guess, found out what winning really stood for and decided to go ahead and play up to their potential. So you're absolutely right. Denver, I think, by far is one of the surprise teams up there with Cincinnati for doing being so well this early in the season. Jay Plummer is not messing up. He's actually throwing the ball. He's making good reads, like, unlike what he's been used to, accustomed to doing. The running game is simply that, the running game. It's always been there. But the defense has really, truly stepped up this season, and that has kept them, as far as being very dominant in games, and that's the reason why they have a 5-1 record, and by far is ahead of the pack as far as being one of the best teams in the AFC.
This week's Sport Flight's Bronze Pioneer, Sport Flight FYI, we always profile a former black athlete who opened the doors for today's black athletes. And in light of the fact that we are in the football season, we choose to call this Bronze Pioneers. Many black athletes of the past are recognized as symbols of struggle for freedom, justice, and equality. Jack Johnson, Joe Louis, Jesse Owens, and Jackie Robinson resonate with the public. However, names such as Fritz Pollard, Kenny Washington, Marion Motley, and Dick Night Train Lane have yet to be afforded similar public status. Sport Flight's Bronze Pioneer is in recognition of these black paragons of football nobility. This week, Bronze Pioneer is Buddy Young. Although reintegration of professional football began in 1946, as late as 1949, only three NFL teams had black players on their roster. However, in the All-American Football Conference, only two teams were without black players. Claude Buddy Young attended the University of Illinois. During Young's freshman year, he tied Red Grange's one-season touchdown record of 13. During his senior year, Young led Illinois to victory in the Rose Bowl by scoring two touchdowns and rushing for 103 yards. During this time, a rumored bidding war between the National Football League and the All-American Football Conference for the services of the 5'5", 165-pound bronze bullet ensued between the All-American Football Conference New York Yankees and the National Football League's L.A. Rams. The owner of the Rams pulled out of the bidding, resulting in Young signing a three-year contract with the New York Yankees. Young's first professional football game was as a member of the College All-Stars. Young demonstrated his talent by leading the All-Stars to the defeat of the Chicago Bears at Soldier Field, rushing for 163 yards. Young's College All-Star game was a preview of things to come. During Young's rookie season with the Yankees, he rushed for 712 yards in 12 games, catching 27 passes for 303 yards and scored 5 touchdowns, and along with his running mate, Spec Sanders, led the New York Yankees to a 11-1 record. Buddy Young played for the Yankees through 1951, ending his career with the Baltimore Colts in 1955. Claude Buddy Young and other luminaries paved the road for today's black athletes. This has been a Sport Flight FYI, Bronze Pioneers. Do you remember when there were the college football games?
Yeah.
Between the pros and I always enjoyed those games. And I think one of the last, if not the last game, was a thunderstorm, rain-drenched game that was canceled because of lightning at Chicago.
Well, those games, I've heard about the games. I never remember watching them, but I did hear about those games. But, you know, that was done a lot before, especially to drum up a lot of interest as far as having, you know, kind of like doubleheaders and stuff like that. So, yeah, we always talk about football players being big and bold and will play in any type of weather. But they ain't playing in no lightning. Screw that.
No, they will definitely pull that. Also on Sportflight, FYI, on a weekly basis, we provide you with black college scores. In order for you to gather more of the scores at the Division II level, just click on to urbancollegesports.com. You can also get rankings, conference records, etc. This past Saturday, Division I AA, Alabama State defeats Prairie View 34-13. Alcorn State downs Texas Southern 29-22. Bethune-Cookman annihilates Savannah State 56-13. Coastal Carolina defeats Gardner-Webb in overtime 34-31. Delaware State beats up on North Carolina A&T 23-13. Grambling State defeats Arkansas Pine Bluff 26-23. Hampton takes Norfolk to the woodshed and defeats them soundly 55-14. Mississippi Valley State creams Paul Quinn 62-0. South Carolina State 49, Florida A&M 3. And finally, Southern defeats Jackson State 20-14. Those are your black college scores. For more information on your black colleges, please click on to urbancollegesports.com. Our sports aficionado question for the week. This week, which following National League city was an American League city at one time? Now that we are talking about the playoffs and Major League Baseball, which following National League city was an American League city at one time? Was it St. Louis, Atlanta, Houston, or San Francisco? Once again, was it St. Louis, Atlanta, Houston, or San Francisco? Sean, I'm sure you know that.
Actually, I do.
Oh, all right. Normally I say that, and I don't think you know the answer.
Yeah, normally, yeah, you will stump me on, but every now and then I can get one.
Well, let's talk about something that you really know about, the NBA report. There have been some retirements. There was an unexpected death of a young center, and the overall comings and goings in training camp this week.
Okay. Well, on basically a somber note, we're going to talk about Jason Collier, unexpected and tragic death Saturday. He had apparent heart attack, and he died at the very young age of 28. The autopsy is basically ongoing. They're going to, as far as, release that after the funeral. So he played for the Atlanta Hawks, and he was okay player, and I'm not, trying to
denigrate him.
Denigrate him anything, but he was a very quiet big man as far as with the Atlanta Hawks. He was well liked. There was really nobody had anything bad to say about the guy. He came out there, did the best he could, and he was in season for a good period of time. So it's a real unfortunate thing. And what it does bring up is this thing about, it really brings up as far as the whole DNA testing, because we're not even talking about Eddie Curry. Let's put Eddie Curry off to the side. Remember, the Lakers' second-round draft pick from Gonzaga, Ronnie Tierford, he has basically a large heart valve where he's going to miss the whole season, and he never signed a contract with the Lakers. First of all, being a second-round pick, he's not guaranteed a contract.
Correct.
His contract is not guaranteed. Lakers, being the professionals that they are going to take care of his medical costs and then going to reevaluate the situation next year. Fred Hoiberg, He underwent open heart surgery this summer as well. So all these heart elements are now becoming a very touchy situation as far as NBA. Now, it went even more so with A. Curry and with the Bulls suggesting that he should take a DNA test to see what problems might, you know, if there's any other problems that might occur. He refused. They said, well, we couldn't really offer you a contract. They was able to trade him to the Knicks, and obviously one of the conditions was he was not going to do a DNA test even for the Knicks, and that's the reason why he is with New York. Everybody's really scared over a possible Reggie Lewis of, you know, the Boston Celtic great in the early 90s who collapsed in the summer, and Hank Gathers. The great Loyola Marymount player who did collapse during a game. In the early 90s. So a lot of people are really concerned about that. I truly do believe they're going about it the wrong way as far as evading somebody's privacy with this whole DNA test, because if this happens, if somebody agrees to that, you have precedence, and then every contract will suspect or it will be mandated that you have to take a DNA test. A lot of people say that's a little far-fetched, but, you know, just as yesterday, the NBA instituted a dress code. Nobody thought that was going to happen.
Now, who are the retirements?
As far as the retirements, we got Allen Houston, who, let's call it like it is, has been retired for really the last 3 years.
That one knee problem just never seemed to come back for him.
It really didn't. He really just could not overcome that knee injury that limited him to 70 games over a course of two seasons. He really tried it again, and it just wasn't happening. So he decided to retire. After 12 years of service in the NBA. So
yeah, at one time he was one of the top guards in the NBA.
Oh, he was great. He was one of the great young outside shooters. Of this league, and it was because of that outside shooting is the reason why he got that huge contract of $100 million. But it was also,
now when he walks away, what portion of that contract will he leave? Will he get the entire contract? Or
I doubt
will
they
negotiate.
I think they negotiate, and he will get a buyout clause, and he'll get a buyout package, and whatever that buyout package is, that will then be split up for the remainder of the contract and go against the Knicks salary cap. So if anything, it relieves some of the salary cap pressure of the Knicks. But the Knicks are so over the salary cap, it's not even funny. So even if they can get a small dent of it out, and trust me, a lot of that is Allen Houston's contract. They're going to have to eat some of it. But it will give them some type of relief.
We've got 10 days to 2 weeks before the season officially opens. What is going on at some of the training camps? I know that LeBron James had a muscle pull or something in his chest. He was hospitalized for a few days, but he has now returned to practice. Any other comings and goings that we should be made aware of during the preseason that will ultimately have some type of impact on the upcoming season?
Just watch for a lot of these star players not playing as much because they do not want to get injured before the start of the season. One thing in particular is the Toronto Raptors losing basically what a basketball version of a friendly is in soccer. They lost to an international basketball team, Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv got their first victory in 25 years in facing an NBA squad. So seeing Toronto, an NBA franchise, lose into an international game is really, it's not really no big deal for us in North America, but it is a big deal across the world because there are speculations of having what's basically a club tournament. One of the things that FIFA has a huge problem with is the NBA champion be calling world champion. And a lot of people, as far as international basketball, believe that's not fair because you have other leagues and people are trying to devise a way to have some type of tournament, but kind of like what the EuroLeague has, but it's like EuroLeague maybe with NCAA type environment, have maybe a 4 or 6 team tournament to determine a real world champion in a sport. This is going to happen. I think somebody just has to have enough guts and put their ego at the door to all agree on a format to have this as far as club teams, because there's great leagues all over this globe, and I'm talking about every sport. And I think basketball does have the shot to do it. The problem is, a lot of people say, well, the season's already long. Why should we play something like this that's basically meaningless? Well, it's for the good of basketball if you want to go ahead and do that. If you want to go ahead and say your team and your league is the best league, go out there and play in the competition. Because, believe it, we already noticed the last couple of years, international basketball, the rest of the world has caught up to the United States. And if we're not bringing our best players out there in those international games and showing why we are the best, we're going to have these situations over and over again.
Well, I think as teams, that is correct. But keep in mind that these teams that we play, they have been together for at least a season, and in most cases a number of seasons, and we are putting together all-star teams to play them. I think
that's the reason why you should have a club tournament.
I agree. On an individual basis, I still say the European players cannot touch the American players.
Oh, and I agree with you 100%.
On an individual basis whatsoever. I want to remind our audience that Sean and I will be doing a preview of the upcoming NBA season the week before the season opens, so you can look forward to that. Our final segment today, the NFL preview for Week 7, which will be this coming Sunday. And before we get into that, I'll have to review what we did for Week 6. And once again, you clean my clock.
Yeah.
Becoming old hat, huh?
Yeah. It's...
You had 4, I had 1.
Wow.
So as it stands now, the total is you are at 24, I am at 19. So I've got to have another solid week like I had last week in order to get back into the fray of things.
Well, week before last.
Week before last, I'm sorry, you're correct. Week before last, I stand corrected.
Yeah,
now, our previews for week number 7. The Pittsburgh Steelers will travel to Cincinnati to take on the 5-1 Cincinnati Bengals. The Steelers will have Big Ben back, and the Steelers will be coming off of a upset by Jacksonville. So the Steelers are at 3-2. The Bengals are at 5-1. Your pigskin pick.
Well, it's an upset for you because I was the one that picked Jacksonville on this one because of no Roethlisberger. The injury with Roethlisberger, they said normally takes 2 to 4 weeks. But because of the big importance of this division game, they did rush him a little bit. I don't know if he's going to be completely 100%, and I'm going ahead and pick Cincinnati for this victory.
I'm going to take Cincinnati in this one as well. I think Cincinnati is on a roll. Their defense does just enough for them, but their offense has become quite powerful. It's one of the top three offenses in the NFL, period. So we'll each go with Cincinnati in this particular instance. The San Diego Chargers, they travel east this Sunday. 3-3 Chargers take on the 3-2 Eagles. Your pigskin pick.
You know, I'm loving what the Chargers are doing. I don't know, maybe the week off, Eagles taking the bye week will help them out, but the Chargers is just running straight forward, and LaDainian Thomas is the best overall player in the league. I'm going to go ahead and pick the Chargers in this contest.
The Eagles had a bye week, but the Eagles are not playing up to their capabilities thus far. They were coming off a loss prior to that bye week. I think they will be hungry for a victory. They will be at home. I see them squeaking by the Chargers next Sunday, so I'll take the Eagles in this particular one. Game 3. The Dallas Cowboys at 4-2 travel to Seattle and take on Seattle at 4-2. Each team is leading their conference, their division.
This is going to be a very close game because this is going to be a drag-out.
Knockdown, drag-out fight.
Yeah, this is absolutely. I think this is going to be almost like Giants Dallas of last week. But I do believe that Dallas, as far as able to go ahead and squeak that victory out against the Giants, they're going to beat Seattle. So I'm picking the Cowboys.
The Cowboys seem to be on a roll at this particular time, so I think I will roll with them. So I go with the Cowboys as well.
Okay.
Game four, the surprising Denver Broncos at 5-1 visit the Northeast New York Giants at 3-2. The Denver Broncos are coming off of their biggest test to date with their victory over the Patriots this past Sunday. Your pigskin pick.
And because of that, they beat the world champions. I don't see having them having a letdown. They're going to come in and beat the Giants. So I'm picking Denver with their defense and their great running game.
This particular one, Denver's going to be on the road. Denver has a phenomenal record at home. Their record isn't nearly as good on the road. They're coming off of a very emotional win against the Patriots, and I'm thinking they might have just a slight letdown, and the Giants might be ready to take them. So I'm going to go with the Giants in this particular event. And our final game is the surprising Buffalo Bills travel to the West Coast to take on the not-so-good Oakland Raiders. The Raiders are at 1-4. The Bills have even their record at 3-3. The Bills are coming off of their second straight win after forcing three turnovers. Your pigskin pick.
Yeah, it seemed like it hurt you to even bring this game up. And because of that, that makes the decision very easy. I think Buffalo is just going to come in there and just annihilate him. Willis McGahee, what can you say about this guy? 143 yards this week. I see them just carving the Oakland defense, just carving them a new butthole. So I'm going ahead and picking Buffalo over Oakland.
The Raiders' defense has not been as good as anticipated. They may be without the services of Randy Moss. With those things in mind, their record is at 1-4. I can't see them defeating Buffalo. I, too, must pick the Buffalo Bills. Another week comes to an end, and as always, we thank you for joining us. Look forward to you joining us next week when, once again, we'll give you our Black College scores, the Bronze Pioneers, the NBA report, as well as previewing and reviewing the NFL. So make certain that you join us next week. Never has so few owed so much to so many. Peace. We're out of here.